You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Proofpoint researchers track the latest developments from the unusually diligent cybercriminals TA-505. ISIS turns to newer, less closely monitored and moderated apps as it's pushed out of larger social networks. Reddit asks users to reset their passwords and to make them good ones. Google seems to have made strides against expansive interpretation of the EU's right to be forgotten. And the curious tweets of @HAL 99999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, January 10th, 2019. Researchers at security firm Proofpoint have described two hitherto undocumented strains of malware, Serve Helper, a backdoor, and Flawed Grace, a remote access Trojan, now being used in the wild by threat actor TA-505. Proofpoint's been tracking TA-505 since 2017. It's a criminal gang connected with banking Trojans, ransomware, and other forms of cybercrime. The targets against which these malware tools are being used are banks, retail establishments, and restaurants. Serve Helper is being distributed in phishing campaigns, typically carried by a malicious Word file or PDF attached to phishing emails. Serve Helper is then used to install the Flawed Grace RAT, and from there the theft proceeds. The 1-2 punch of Serve Helper and Flawed Grace is likely to be with us for some time, unfortunately. Proofpoint thinks they represent a long-term investment on the part of TA-505 and that the group has shown patience, focus, and persistence in the past. ISIS has for some time received attention from content moderators on Facebook, Twitter, Telegram, and YouTube, all of which have been interested in pushing the terrorist group off their platforms. Those efforts have certainly been halting and incomplete, and frequently criticized by observers who found the moderation insufficient, inconsistent, or even insupportable, but they have had a cumulative effect on ISIS. The group has depended on the internet for inspiration, much as the Ayatollah Khomeini depended on distribution of cassette tapes of his sermons to influence opinion in the Shah's Iran before the Islamic Revolution. Wired has an account of how ISIS is turning from large social networks to more accessible, less easily moderated chat apps. The group's Amaq News agency has recently found that some newer messenger applications are proving more suitable for their purposes. Chat groups, channels, and media sharing apps, some open source, many designed for business gaming purposes. Some of these include Rocket Chat, Viber, and Yahoo Together. As they've noticed ISIS promoting their use, several of the applications are seeking to block the group's adherents and followers from establishing a presence there, but with mixed results. Among the more interesting developments has been ISIS's use of gaming channels for inspiration. Discord, in particular, is said to be drawing a fair amount of ISIS activity. Wired calls for all of these channels to take quick action against the burgeoning jihadist presence, but it's not clear how such action could be taken in an unproblematic way. Consider gaming channels. How clearly would ISIS content stand out from the ordinary, disinhibited chatter of online gaming? The seemingly endless string of data breaches and privacy violations by service providers large and small has led to a growing call for meaningful privacy and data protection legislation here in the U.S. Amish Devatia is CEO and co-founder of Baffle, a company focused on data encryption and key management, and he offers his views on the growing frustration with how companies handle our private information.
Data collection is a given these days. No matter what we do, data will be collected. Obviously, a lot of the tech companies base their entire business models on the fact that they collect data, and they have to profit from it, otherwise they would have to charge for their services. But just because they have data does not mean that they can misappropriate it. And I think that's where regulation really comes in, that we have to make sure that the regulation will make sure that these companies and any entity, it doesn't even have to be a company, even the government is responsible for losing data. So any entity that collects data has to process it responsibly.
And so how do you propose that that can be done?
I think it is a dialogue. I think regulations like GDPR force the creation of what is known as a DPO, a data protection officer. So data protection officer has to be a key voice in that dialogue. And again, it is a good mix. It is a balance that they have to strive between business needs and the fact that it is somebody else's data that they are processing. So we come up with ways of actually protecting data. One of the important things that the industry is gravitating towards is that the data has to be protected as soon as it's collected. But then the difficult part comes in, which is how do you figure out a way where you process that data without actually revealing the underlying records themselves? GDPR certainly has set the stage, but then over the course of last year, we've had many other regulations that have come in and followed through with that. The California Consumer Privacy Act, even overseas, countries like Singapore have the Personal Data Protection Act, and all of them are starting to focus on the fact that you have to make sure that the records themselves are protected. They don't necessarily get into the technology and say, this is how you shall protect it. They all just say you have to protect the data, because if you lose it, then you'll be fined.
And do you suppose that those fines are going to have the intended effect, or might we be in for some unintended consequences?
Well, we'll see how it works out. I think that decisions are eventually going to be decided by the courts, because we already have started seeing some of these lawsuits being filed in connection with GDPR, or now actually thanks to regulation in this country by U.S. entities as well. The Marriott breach, which is monumental, 500 million records, is a great case in point of how breaches continue to happen. Breaches continue to happen in spite of all the money that's being spent on cybersecurity. So clearly, we are not anticipating these threats well. One of the running jokes we have is one of the reasons why these breaches are not being detected is because we have this Mission Impossible threat model that we are working with, where we are assuming that the way threats happen and attacks happen is when Tom Cruise drops from the ceiling of the data center and steals disks. Well, it doesn't happen like that. There's much, much easier ways to steal data. And that's exactly what happened in case of Marriott, where they stole the data while being privileged users or database administrators, if you will. They were pretending to be administrators, stole the data, and encrypted the data on their way out so it couldn't be detected. many, many details will still emerge, but the early indications seem to be that they did do what was required by compliance, which is protecting data at rest, but it wasn't adequate. So clearly encryption and protection mechanisms need to continue to evolve to make sure that the threats are mitigated.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I mean, it strikes me that every company says your privacy is important to us. But I think we've reached the point where when you hear a company say that, there's a tendency to kind of roll your eyes and say, yeah, but in the meantime, here's everything you're doing with my data. Do you think there's a competitive advantage to be had here from companies who actually, walk the walk, talk the talk?
Absolutely, there is. So security has traditionally always been an afterthought. It's always been something that's a necessary evil in order to get through compliance or get through audit. I think this year, 2018, has really been the year at which it starts to become more of a competitive advantage. If you, as the data collector, is able to store the data responsibly, and then be able to process the data so that you're never actually exposing the data in the clear, that is the winning formula. And that's what will set these companies apart. Notification requirements, like we were talking about in our last podcast, are absolutely all over the place now. Every state has one, which means that if you lose data in the clear, you have to disclose it. And that is a huge damage to reputation of these companies because they're all consumer facing and they have to make sure that customers feel good about doing business with them. So it is going to become a competitive advantage. And I think that's where the companies will take it seriously because their investment now is really about enhancing their business more than just an unnecessary evil to avoid hackers getting in.
That's Amish Devetia from Baffle. If you're a Reddit user and have recently found your account inaccessible, the service is in the process of restoring access user by user. Reddit has locked down a large number of accounts over security suspicions aroused by unusual activity in those accounts, consistent with the presence of unauthorized users. As users reset their credentials, Reddit is advising them to choose complicated, non-obvious passwords, and above all, not to recycle passwords used in other accounts. GDPR has had a worldwide impact, but a recent advisory opinion rendered to the European Court of Justice, the EU's High Court based in Luxembourg, may have imposed some limits on the application of the right to be forgotten in particular. The opinion is non-binding but significant and is being regarded as a win for Google, which has been fighting an attempt by French authorities to get the search engine provider to apply the right to be forgotten everywhere. The basis for the Advocate General's opinion is concern about reciprocal efforts such enforcement might have. The Advocate General warned that ordering removal of content from sites accessed outside the European Union would in all likelihood provoke retaliation by other jurisdictions who would block information from being accessed from within the EU. As he put it, there's a real risk of reducing freedom of expression to the lowest common denominator across Europe and the world. And finally, reflections on how NSA came to learn about the possibility that it had a pack rat at Fort Meade continues to take an interesting turn. Redacted court documents released in the Hal Martin case suggested to many that Mr. Martin had been in touch with the shadow brokers and perhaps had been the source of the tools the brokers leaked. One of the tweets mentioned material that had a shelf life of 3 weeks. But the shelf life 3 weeks tweets said to have aroused such suspicion at NSA in 2016 were apparently turned over to NSA by Kaspersky, according to anonymous sources not authorized to discuss what they know, who spoke to Politico this week. The tweet was addressed to Yevgeny, presumably Eugene Kaspersky himself, by @hal99999999, as Ars Technica reports. Thus, it was Kaspersky, the Washington Post notes, and not U.S. counterintelligence officers who first twigged to the possibility that someone may have been getting ready to leak classified information, and that warning is being connected to Hal Martin's arrest. 2 points are worth making. First, Mr. Martin, who's entitled to the presumption of innocence, is charged with mishandling and unlawful retention of classified material, not with passing it to anyone. So the shadow broker's leaks that soon followed the tweets may be coincidental, if one believes in such things. Second, as interesting as we find reading and writing about this developing story, the fact that anonymous sources not authorized to speak are speaking as much as they are suggests that U.S. federal insider threat programs remain more loosey-goosey than the intelligence community would probably hope. Sure, it's interesting, but if the feds are this leaky, what hope is there for the average small business contractor trying to control its insider threat exposure? By the way, how do we know that @HAL9999999 is in fact even a person? Couldn't it be some malign AI? It's not exactly the HAL 9000 that Mr. Kubrick and Clark tried to warn us against in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Too many nines, for one thing. But maybe an offspring or a cousin? We've heard about this AI stuff. Think 2001 was just fiction? Head in the sand, sheeple, head in the sand. We're just kidding, of course.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
And joining me once again is Jonathan Katz. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Maryland and also director of the Maryland Cybersecurity Center. Jonathan, good to have you back. We had a story come by from Wired, and this was about the next generation of Wi-Fi security, upping their game and increasing security there with better encryption and so on. Can you give us an overview of what's going on here?
Yeah, this is a new standard, the WPA3 standard that's been coming out to protect, as you said, wireless communication. And it has a number of interesting features, actually, and upgrades to the previous security that was being offered by WPA2. And in particular, one of the things it addresses is the fact that many people might be using a very weak password to protect their wireless communications. And they built in protection here to kind of mitigate against that sort of thing.
And how can they do something like that? What's going on under the hood?
Well, right now in the WPA2 standard, the password is sent in such a way or used in such a way that an attacker can record the conversation between a user and the base station, record all the messages that were sent back and forth, and then go offline and try to apply what's known as an offline dictionary attack, basically trying thousands of different potential common passwords until it finds the right one. And the point is that those kind of offline dictionary attacks are much more easy for an attacker to carry out than an online attack where they have to sit there and actively interact with your network. So the new WPA3 standard actually prevents this offline dictionary attack, which means that even if you're using a weak password, the attacker won't be able to go offline and figure it out.
Hmm. And so by default, WPA3 is going to have encryption active from the get-go.
Yeah, so, I mean, WPA2 also offers encryption, but I guess the point is here that it's an extra layer of protection for users that don't choose strong passwords. Now, by the way, that's not to say that you shouldn't choose a strong password. Obviously, a strong password is going to be better than a weak one, but here they're offering some additional layer of protection even for people who choose weak passwords.
Yeah, kind of protecting people from themselves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly how they're selling it.
Yeah. All right, it's interesting. Well, I have to see how it spreads and how quickly this actually makes it out into devices.
Yeah, we'll have to see actually how quickly manufacturers are going to install this new standard in their devices to allow users to go ahead and upgrade.
Yeah. Jonathan Katz, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.